Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation and Policy and Finance Committee for this Tuesday, March 14th. And our first item on the agenda is the moving of the minutes from our previous meeting of March 10th. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the minutes of March 10th.
The minutes are moved. Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Our first bill on the agenda is House File 1153. Representative Burkle, good to see you again. Welcome back to the committee. I know you made an appearance last year, or last biennium. So please tell us about House File 1153. I do see that there's an author's amendment labeled A1, so let's perhaps start with that. But I will move that House File 1153 be re-referred to the General Register.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 11, we're doing the amendment first, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, the author's amendment is last year during conference committee, we kind of agreed with the DOT that we changed the language from conditioned grass seed to processed. So you'll see on page 1, line 1.16.
Yeah,
that's the change.
I don't know if we have an issue with your mic or...
Oh, it's not. Can you hear me? Yeah. Maybe if I get close. Is that better?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll eat the mic. 1.16 is where we change conditioned seed to RAR processed, and that's what the amendment does.
Okay. And this is to get the bill in the shape the author would like us to consider it. Is there a discussion to the A1? All those in favor signify... I will move the A1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Okay, now we have House File 1153 as amended.
Sure.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, House File 1153 is a bill to clarify that grass seed that has been run through a cleaning or screening mill still qualifies as an ag product for purposes of the Special Farm Product Permit Program. Current law clearly states that grass seed that has been harvested from a field is an agricultural crop and qualifies for the permit, but it is not clear whether grass seed that has been cleaned in a screening mill continues to be considered an ag crop. This bill makes it clear that the clean grass seed remains an agricultural crop. This legislation was included in last year's conference committee, as I said, during the amendment. However, the conference committee agreement was not adopted, so we're bringing the bill back this year. With me today is Bruce Clavin. I'll let him kind of represent the Turf Seed Council, and he can tell you more about the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Clavin. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Bruce Clavin, I represent the Minnesota Turf Seed Council. I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for scheduling us before the second deadline and to Ms. Swagger and Mr. Burris for getting our amendment prepared so quickly yesterday. The section of law being amended here is a provision for special permits on hauling ag products. It allows these products in this list to haul 90,000 pounds on six axles or 97,000 on seven, and that dates back to 2008. The issue being what we're trying to solve here has to do with moving the grass seed on container trucks to Winnipeg, where they'll be loaded on a unit train. And so when this comes off the combine uncleaned, it's clearly an ag product under line 1.10. When they remove the hulls and the screens and the foreign material, it's still the same product. It's just been cleaned. And when they load their unit, or when they load the containers, right now they can put 44,000 pounds in. To do it full would be 55. That brings the overall weight of the truck up to 92. And so this would allow the cleaning mills to haul 97 on 7. They'd only be 92, but they could use the 7-axle permit. And that's really all that's happening here.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions or comments for either the author or the testifier? Did you want to add anything, Representative Burkle?
No, thanks.
Okay. Committee discussion? All right. Final thoughts that you want to share with the committee, Representative Burkle?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nothing pressing, nothing heavy here. I know you have bigger bills to talk about today, although this one's pretty weighty. No
Very
pun
nice.
Intended.
Good one. Actually, I just want to make sure I'll check before we vote that there's anyone else that wants to testify on this bill. Okay. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 1153, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. I believe Representative Tabke is close to being here. I know he was delayed in some traffic, but we'll just hold here for him.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Petersburg, I can also maybe explain about the Met Council bill, too.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. We are just totally tracking.
Yeah.
Members, you may have noticed the House File 2092 was pulled from the agenda today. That was a bill to elect the Metropolitan Council, which I am the chief author of. We had a series of calls over recent days, and it was clear to me that there is a pretty strong legislative consensus to do something pretty major in terms of restructuring the Met Council and looking at its governance very closely. I'm very encouraged by that. But there's no real legislative consensus on how to do that. And so what we've done is you'll see an amendment I believe has been posted to form a working group here in the interim to come up with some solutions. A number of proposals have been circulated, in recent years, from direct election to doing a council of governments to doing a combination of elected and appointed officials, et cetera, and then major restructuring of the agency itself in terms of its functions. And so we'll look at those options in the interim, and that's what the bill has evolved into. So, I think I've talked to chairs both. I've talked to Representative Petersburg as well as the chair and ranking member of state government, which is the bill, another committee of jurisdiction for this bill, where it would go after we consider it. And again, while there's still some details to be worked out, I think the general concept of stepping back and really having a good public process and looking at all the options is emerging. There's an emerging consensus about that approach. So we'll hear that on Thursday, and that's why it's pulled today. There just wasn't enough time to, fully engage, with the public on this new concept. So that's why we decided not to do it today. Representative Petersburg.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know you and I chatted, and because this amendment we weren't going to be able to get till today was such a massive change, I think it's wise on your part to hold it for next Thursday or this coming Thursday, because that helps with if there are any other amendments and stuff that we might have. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for doing that.
And thank you. And before we get to Representative Tapke's bill, we'll just get him settled here. A few people have said fine and good, but we've had a few of these committees and commissions over the years, and why is this different? And so I would simply answer by saying we've never had anything legislatively led and legislatively initiated. I think the conditions, I think some of the issues that have appeared in recent years are different than we've had before with this agency, and speak to a little more urgency on this question. The other committees have come up with the same conclusion, staggered terms. And I don't believe that that is going to really be what we're looking for. And I haven't talked to any legislator that feels that that's sufficient. So while we can't prejudge the outcome of what the commission will do, my sense is that we'll be looking at something a little bit more substantive than that, Representative Petersburg and members. So with that, I'm glad we got that clarified. Thank you. And we will now hear from Representative Tabke. House File 1600. Welcome. I'm glad you had a chance to catch your breath.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
And This bill, well, do you want to, you can move your bill. You're a committee member here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1600 goes to public safety.
Excellent.
Re-refer to public safety.
Great. We have a motion to consider and move House File 1600 to public safety. Representative Tabke, please present your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So we have been working on the pay for state pay for troopers and other folks in the bargaining unit for quite some time here in the Minnesota legislature. And so we have this bill today, which is House File 1600, which is directing MMB to make sure that as we are considering pay for troopers, for conservation officers and folks of the like in that bargaining unit, that we compare them to other law enforcement agencies. And so this came to us here in transportation from State Gov, where it passed unanimously on a roll call vote. And so we had what we're working on is making sure that troopers and everyone in that stays competitive with other folks. So we've got a lot of issues with classes not being filled for troopers and folks leaving from troopers, and we need to make sure that that stops. And Mr. Chair, we have a testifier for today, Mike Ledoux from the Troopers Association.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll hear from Mr. Ledoux, and then we'll engage in committee discussion. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Mike Ledoux. I've had the honor and privilege of being a state trooper for 29 years. I'm the president of the Minnesota State Patrol Troopers Association, and I testify today in that role. I'm also the current chair of the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association, which represents all non-supervisory state law enforcement officers during collective bargaining. I would like to express my gratitude to Representative Tabke for authoring House File 1600 and for his unwavering support for all state law enforcement officers in addressing the wage disparity issue. Additionally, I would like to extend my thanks to the 20 co-authors as well. The purpose of this legislation is to provide a sound and comprehensive system for determining appropriate compensation for state troopers and other state law enforcement officers. In February of 2021, the legislative auditor released a clear, concise, and objective report detailing the large wage disparity for state troopers when compared to the 34-city comparison group, which was established by the legislature in 2020. The OLA report indicated that the top base wage that could be earned by state troopers in 2019 was substantially less than top base wage available to police officers in most cities reviewed. The legislative intervention taken in the 2020 special session helped mitigate the disparity at starting wage, but a large disparity still exists at top wage. As a result of this market adjustment, the State Patrol moved one place on our list from 33rd place from 32nd. This disparity hurts career earnings, retirement benefits, and creates retention and recruitment issues. This wage disparity was created because of the practice of pattern settlement. For 5 years, from 2003 to 2012, we received 5 years of zeros, which exacerbated this disparity. The practice of pattern settlement has done immeasurable harm to state law enforcement officers and their families for the majority of my career. As a result of the well-documented hiring crisis, experienced law enforcement officers have become free agents. They turn lower-paying agencies into training departments instead of destination departments. The State Patrol has been forced to have two academies a year just to keep up with normal attrition because of insufficient qualified applicants. We have been unable to fill 63 positions funded by the legislature. House File 1600 strengthens the salary survey language of 299 DO3 and it provides much-needed legislative oversight for 9 years to assure that the wage disparity is eliminated and we can recruit, retain, and ultimately retire these dedicated public safety professionals. We have attempted to address the wage disparity for the last decade and have been unsuccessful. Because we are essential employees, we lack the ability to strike. We cannot solve our wage disparity problem with the same thinking that was used to create it. State troopers are not average, so I do not believe it is unreasonable to expect them to be paid at or above the average median wage of the comparison group that was established by the legislature. State law enforcement officers put service before self each day for the security, benefit, and protection of the citizens of Minnesota. Please recognize their service by supporting House File 1600. Mr. Chair, I would be happy to answer any follow-up questions and appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want clarification. There's a spreadsheet out here from Law Enforcement Labor Services. It doesn't indicate what the wage is, but it looks like that's a monthly wage. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Tabke?
Okay.
Is there any additional questions or discussion from members of the committee? And is there anyone else that was in the audience that would like to testify? Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Vice Chair Tabke. Do you have any closing?
Mr. Chair?
Oh, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I would like to also, we got one on the academies too, and I'm just inquiring is if this will help us fulfill the academies and the way we currently, I know there's a lot of vacancies with that as well, and I'm wondering if that would be helpful. And I don't want to drag this out. I'm just curious.
Well, that's a good question. Representative Tabke, if you want to take a shot at that, and then we can see if there's anyone from the State Patrol or the agency that could answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg. Yes, that is exactly the goal, is to, by having competitive wages, to make sure that we are filling the academies, to make sure that we are filling these positions that are open.
Thank you.
Okay. And did you have any further questions about the academy itself?
Okay. No, Mr. Chair, I know that we're having trouble filling those, and
right.
Colonel Langer has talked about that before as well, so yes. I'm just glad we're taking care of it. Thank you.
Okay. Excellent. Wonderful. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, Vice Chair Tappy, I want to...
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just appreciate everyone's support and work supporting law enforcement, so thank you.
Okay. Members, Representative Tabke renews his motion that House File 1600 be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Our next bill on the agenda is House File 100. Welcome to the committee, Commerce Chair Stephenson.
Good morning.
I think what we'll do, members, is even though this is a big bill, we do have some very specific areas under our jurisdiction. As you can see from the various engrossments, that this has been to a number of different committees, and while I think we'll be able, you know, the bill as a whole, there are many different facets to it. We want to really confine our conversation to both the finance and policy issues related to transportation. And with that, I'll ask Chair Stephenson to go through the relevant parts of the bill for our committee, and then we can have testimony, questions and answers, and we have a number of amendments to work through as well. So welcome to the Transportation Committee, and look forward to hearing areas of our jurisdiction and highway. See, I'm always stuck on Highway 100. What can I say? House File 100.
I thought you were stuck on Highway 10, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the
By the way, Sorry. Before you present your bill, I also wanted to let the committee know that we're actually moving this bill back to your committee. There are some changes which I think you can share with the committee that are coming on. So the motion for House File 100 is to move it back to the Commerce Committee. So today we're moving this bill out of Transportation and to Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 100 is the bill to legalize adult use cannabis in Minnesota, both because I know the committee has other business and I know there are testifiers. I'll be very brief in my remarks. I will just on an overall basis say that Minnesotans are ready for this change. Our current cannabis laws are doing more harm than good, and Minnesotans deserve the freedom and respect to make their own decisions about cannabis. As the chair mentioned, the bill is moving from here to Commerce. The reason why we are doing that is because we do anticipate a substantial amendment in the Commerce Committee to resolve some of the open licensing questions that members may have heard of, particularly with regard to hemp products, and Commerce is the committee that has jurisdiction over that. It also allows us to kind of go full circle in this amazing journey through the legislature that we've been on with this bill. I think this is hearing number 12 or 11, somewhere around there, so we get to come back to where we started and go to Commerce before heading off to taxes and ways and means. This committee, of course, there are some financial questions related to appropriations to the Department of Public Safety and the State Patrol that we can discuss, and of course the policy issues related to transportation as it interacts with cannabis.
Thank you very much. So let's go to our testifiers first, and then we'll engage the committee with questions and discussion. Our first testifier is John Hausladen. I saw John earlier. Oh, here he is. Welcome back to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is John Hausladen, and I am president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 100. I do want to acknowledge Chair Stevenson has been meeting with us. We've shared a number of our concerns, and we are working on language that hopefully will maybe come in the next committee, so we are working on that. But until that's done, we do still have some concerns that we need to share with you today. And I speak primarily today as the Minnesota Trucking Association, but we are part of a larger coalition, Minnesotans Against Marijuana Legalization, which includes groups like school bus operators, charter bus operators, utility contractors, the Beverage Association. I think you have the list in your packet. And what I can speak to today is an industry that has lived this. And I can very specifically talk about its impacts on workforce availability. I have a member who is based in Minnesota with operations in Minnesota and Colorado. And what this member tells me is once Colorado passed their legislation, their ability to recruit truck drivers was dramatically impacted, and it was for one simple reason, that they are having a difficult time having people pass the pre-employment drug test. And I think that's the challenge. One of the things that you know as a committee, as well as anyone, is workforce, supply chain, systems, all of this integration. And our biggest concern about this is the long-term impacts that this has on critical industries and transportation. And so a person adopts a cannabis lifestyle. They don't want to be a truck driver today, but maybe someday they do. And now when the time comes to take that pre-employment test, they simply can't pass it. We have great concerns about this impacting the industry's ability to have a workforce downstream, like I said. But even today, we have seen truck drivers who thought they were taking a safe product that had no THC in it, just CBD oil, that have had a positive drug test. Because of that, they're taken out of the truck, they're taken off duty, and frankly, they've probably lost their career because they were taking what they thought was a safe legal product. And one of the concerns we have beyond the workforce is just highway safety. We know from the data that we see in other states that traffic crashes and fatalities do go up. We think that this is not going to make the road safer. And despite the best efforts, and We know that the chief author has worked hard to try and make a bill that addresses so many concerns. We believe these are just mitigating impacts, not really eliminating them. So our concerns are highway safety, workforce, and frankly, just the ability to make sure that we can keep the economy running. There are some specific things in the bill that I think are the purview of this committee. Under the legislation, and I know the chief author is considering this, right now we are creating new categories of, we have a cannabis transporter, we have a cannabis delivery service, none of whom have background checks for basic things like motor vehicle records. And we think these are things that are required to make sure that if people are being put in commerce, hauling anything, it doesn't matter the product, that those sort of checks are required to make sure that they're safe. We do appreciate the effort to put more money for drug recognition experts and for trying to develop technology. These are the right things because they're critical. Because right now we do not have an equivalent test to determine if someone is impaired or intoxicated when under the influence of cannabis on the road. And our greatest concern is until we have that, we're really putting impaired drivers on the road without a test to validate it and just hoping that bad things don't happen. And we wish we lived in a world where everything happened neatly and cleanly and they as prescribed by the dosage and the usage. But we do know that things happen, like people take it and then mix it with alcohol and then get behind the wheel, and perhaps they're even a younger person. So we thank you for the opportunity to comment on these things today. We appreciate, again, working with the chief author on many of these issues and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Haslouden. So you mentioned about the transporter and delivery systems, and because these usually are smaller amounts, I'm guessing that those are going to be delivered by smaller vans and so forth. And those are the size vans that do not require a CDL. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I represent Petersburg. I don't know exactly. I think a number of types of vehicles could be used in transporting the product. If they're over a certain size and weight, they would require a CDL, but smaller ones would not. So that would, if you're using like a Sprinter van or something that you can envision that size, it would probably not require a CDL.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And then one other question that I don't know if you can answer it or somebody from the department, but my understanding is that if you are a light rail operator or train or boat or airplane operator, you aren't under the requirements of a CDL. Requirements in regards to cannabis as well, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, the bill specifically addresses the CDL component, which that is our members, but I would just state that every U.S. DOT transportation mode has mandated drug and alcohol testing, air, rail, water. There is language in the bill that in different areas, I think, attempts to address that. We would urge the author and the committee to think about being more explicit in that, because we think there just are a lot of modes, and this is such a big bill to make sure that all those pieces are neatly tied together, I think, is really critical.
Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Maybe more questions later, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to briefly say something to Mr. Haslouden before I forget, because he mentioned there's just so much going on here. He mentioned the background checks for the operators of these smaller systems. So there's what we did in the bill was we established that the office can make all sorts of requirements for background checks by rulemaking, because we thought that it was too much to parse out for each license what kind of convictions would disqualify versus what could not, and that was better handled by rulemaking. So that's how we did address that issue in the bill.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we do appreciate that. Some of the language that we've been talking to Chair Stevenson is essentially the same language that a commercial driver is required in terms of just vehicle background checks. So we'll continue to work on that, but thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next we have Glenn McElfrish from Flift Beverages. Welcome to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Hornstein, committee members, and Representative Stevenson, thank you for allowing me to speak today on HF 100. My name is Glenn McElfrish, and I'm co-founder of Plift, a hemp-derived beverage company produced here in Minnesota. We have appreciated Representative Stevenson's willingness to meet with us and hear our concerns. And just for a little bit of background, I have 10 years of experience in the marijuana industry and significant firsthand experience with the idiosyncrasies of marijuana transportation. From 2018 to 2019, I was the director of expansion at a marijuana distribution company, and my job entailed visiting different states to determine the viability of launching a transportation and distribution business in that state. After the security modifications to the four transit vans, securing and modifying a storage facility to meet any regulatory requirements, and monthly auto insurance premiums that often exceeded the vehicle notes, we never expanded into new markets. From 2019 until December 2022, I managed marijuana operations or submitted applications in states that required two drivers in every marijuana transport vehicle. These two driver requirements, which are in the current engrossment, raised product prices for patients and consumers and made it even harder for businesses, including social equity businesses, to reach profitability. When my business partner and I in Plift made the decision to switch away from marijuana-derived products to hemp-derived products, we were excited to move away from the regulatory requirements like the two-driver rule and manufacture a trailer full of products to sell across state lines. We believe Section 10114 of the Agricultural Improvement Act of 2018 directly applies to hemp businesses like ours. That section explicitly states, no state or Indian tribe shall prohibit the transportation or shipment of hemp or hemp products produced. The ability to manufacture our products and in Minnesota, sell them in other states, and safely transport our products across state lines is critical to our success and ability to create hundreds of good-paying jobs for Minnesotans. So I was surprised to see a two-driver requirement at 69.5 and various restrictions on the transportation and shipment of hemp in the current engrossment of HF-100. Article 1, Sections 9 and 30 directly conflict with the Agricultural Improvement Act of 2018 and the U.S. Constitution's Dormant Commerce Clause. This conflict is highly likely to result in litigation and delay the launch of HF-100's automatic expungement provisions and the commencement of adult-use sales. Please do not let this important bill restrict the shipment of and transportation of hemp and hemp products. To be clear, Plift fully supports marijuana legalization, hemp businesses, and collaborating with law enforcement agencies across Minnesota by providing them the tools they need to keep our law enforcement officers safe, our roads safe, and our families safe. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Stevenson, thank you once again for the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Oh. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the first I've heard of these particular concerns, and I'm wondering, Chief Author of the bill has any comment on the changes recommended here.
Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative West, I think that there's room for discussion about this, the two-driver rule. You know, the concern has been largely around the issue related to banking, which, of course, is less applicable to the hemp side of the equation. So I think there's a good point to be had here and some room for discussion.
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson, for the clear response. Obviously, he's not an opponent of the bill from hemp-derived businesses. I think this is something that could be addressed because it seems it's coming from a pro-cannabis side, so it's not necessarily trying to harm the bill. I think it could be an improvement worth considering.
Thank you, Representative West. And thank you for your testimony.
Thank
next,
you,
we have Linda Stanton. Good morning.
Good
Welcome
morning.
Welcome to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Linda Stanton. Good morning. Thank you for listening to my testimony today. Lately, there have been numerous published stories about the open drug use and crime and other serious problems on our metro area transit rails in the cities. I was glad to see a proposal for an ambassador program to assist with those problems. However, it seems like the legislature is not serious about admitting that we have drug abuse and addiction in this state and the problems that go with that, homelessness, crime, and serious mental illness. It makes one wonder what it takes to wake people up and get serious about the risks and harms of cannabis. Commercializing cannabis isn't going to make the problem better. In response to proponents who say prohibition has worked, hasn't worked, the war on drugs failed, opponents like me say, officials have given up on enforcement, education, and deterrence. Don't stop enforcing our laws, then throw up your hands and say, oh, it's not working. Don't tell us the goal is to eliminate the illegal market when 10 years of data show that the illicit market follows the legal market and grows. Harder drugs are brought in by cartels. The bill will spread crime and illegal activity all over the state. People say kids are getting marijuana now. We say, and they're getting harmed now too. What do you think will happen after legalization? More kids will get harmed. There have been over 20,000 peer-reviewed scientific papers that prove marijuana is not a safe drug for those under 25. When is the legislature going to take the risks and harms seriously? Even Democrat voters oppose cannabis legalization. I urge you to vote no. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions or comments? Appreciate your coming in this morning.
Thank you very much.
Okay, members, is there anyone else that wants to testify that hadn't signed up? Okay, members, at this time, if you have questions of the author specifically, we can do that, and then we can get into the amendments that have been pre-filed. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question revolves around the trucking associations mentioned, and you responded that that'd be dealt with during rulemaking. Could you quickly detail what type of rulemaking that is included in the bill and whether that rulemaking includes public input?
Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative West, yeah, there's a lot of rulemaking in the bill, as you can imagine, because we're standing up a new statewide agency. There is the ability for expedited rulemaking under the bill, but that does, as I'm sure you know, still include the ability for public comment, is my understanding. So I do expect public input. The specific issue about sort of disqualifiers for various licenses from a prior criminal conviction, we just thought after, you know, the bill as introduced disallowed any felony conviction from having a license, and that was problematic in a lot of different ways. And so we decided a more flexible approach was necessary early on, and then further decided that it would be very difficult to kind of parse out which felonies for which licenses in the context of legislation, and so decided rulemaking would allow a more flexible approach to that particular issue.
Representative West?
Okay.
Any other questions? Representative Murphy?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I just have a question about powers and duties. It says your subsection, or number two on 1419, says to establish programming services, notification to protect, maintain, and improve health of citizens, but it doesn't use the word cannabis anywhere in there. So that's a pretty broad statement, so 1419. Just wondering why, in a lot of other cases, you've had, you know, cannabis or cannabinoid products, but that line doesn't have it, so it's really broad.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I see what you're flagging there. I certainly would think that given the context of the office and its broader, what it's actually allowed to do, we're probably talking about things that pertain to cannabis or have some link to cannabis. You know, if that's a concern to you and other members, it's something that we could talk about adding the word cannabis or somehow tying it more generally to cannabis. I'm not necessarily opposed to that, but I do think that you should probably read that in the context of the whole section and the whole bill, but I hear you.
Yeah,
thank you for your question.
I think that would be great just to keep from having any assumptions there. It's easy. It's all the way through the rest of it. It's listed there. I think it'd be important to make sure that's not left alone because it is a pretty big statement as far as what it could be deemed as overreach later. It could enter in there.
Thank you for the question. Representative Petersburg, and again, just a reminder, we want to make every effort to confine our questions and comments to the transportation-related matters here. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to ask, I think maybe after the amendments, when we get discussing the bill, it would be, I think, advantageous for us to hear from the State Highway Patrol on how enforcement might be handled in this regard. I think that's certainly our purview if the department might be available later.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. It's very much in our purview. I think I would like to see, you know, we'd like to get the testimony, general testimony and discussion done now before amendment. So if you would like to call up the State Patrol now, we could do that.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. Is there a representative from the State Patrol that's available to answer questions? Well, maybe later.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I spent some time, Mr. Chair, talking with Colonel Langer and talking about the process about when somebody stopped with the potential abuse of being and being intoxicated by marijuana or other drugs that are not alcohol related. And he talked about trying then to get a MRE is the individual who's trained in determining intoxication without drug use.
DRE,
that's it. And that sometimes if they're not available, we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place as well. And so I was just curious on that. And, you know, I'm not sure if somebody else can respond to that, but I think that's important for us to know now whether or not this can be enforced or not, too. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your comment. Maybe Chair Stevens, you could talk a little about the DRE piece of the bill, and then we'll get into our amendments.
Yeah, I'll just speak first, and I think this will come up probably several times as we're talking today, so it's worth noting that we often think about a lot of people will point out the challenge that cannabis presents and that there isn't a test analogous to what we have for alcohol where we can measure someone's impairment by figuring out how much alcohol is in their bloodstream, and we have a sort of de facto rule that if you're above 0.08, you are too intoxicated to drive. What is important for committee members to understand is alcohol is actually the outlier here. There are a lot of substances that you can consume legally that can impair your ability to drive to the point where you should not be driving, whether it's prescription drugs, over-the-counter cold medication, sleep aids, lots of different things that you could take and then you really should not be driving. And our law has a system for dealing with that, which is that you can't drive with those substances in your system if it's impairing your driving, and we measure that from a behavioral perspective. And that gets into what Representative Petersburg is talking to a little bit about, which is the drug recognition experts, or DREs. And we do expect to want to see more of that after legalization. There's some funding in the bill. There's an amendment that we're going to be considering to increase that funding, and I'll maybe speak more to that when we get to that amendment. There also is in the bill a pilot project for what's called an oral fluid test. This is an effort to develop a similar process to what we have with, you know, breathalyzers or blood alcohol testing. But this isn't a new problem. It is a problem that we have, I don't even know if you want to call it a problem, an issue that we have with many other substances. I can tell you as a working prosecutor, we are able to prosecute people for driving under the influences of all of those other substances because we can demonstrate that people were impaired at the time.
Do a follow-up here, and then we'll start our amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things, but certainly we would agree that this will exacerbate the problem for that. I did look around, and I do think Mr. Hansen from the Office of Traffic Safety is here. Maybe he has some ability to talk about it or not.
Yeah, we'll have a quick question and answer for Mr. Hansen, and I do want to get to our amendments.
Thanks. While he's coming up, Mr. Chair, can I just say that I don't agree with the idea that it would exacerbate the problem. And in fact, the data from other states doesn't support that it will exacerbate the problem. But we can talk more about that.
Okay. Representative Petersburg, a question for Director Hansen.
Yes, just quickly, in regards to enforcement and the stopping and trying to get a DRE there, what is the process that an officer would go through?
Director Hansen, and Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Mike Hansen, and I have the privilege of serving as the director for the Department of Public Safety's Office of Traffic Safety. And, Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, a very good question. Currently, we have about 260 plus or minus DREs, or drug recognition experts or evaluators, within about 120 or 122 departments across the state. If an officer encounters a driver who's impaired by something other than alcohol, and they wish to use the services of a DRE to assist them with that evaluation, they're going to check with their dispatcher, their communication center. They're going to see if there's one on or working in the area, either within their agency or within an allied agency, and then that DRE would be dispatched to the scene. There are occasions also where a DRE-trained law enforcement officer would be called out from home to come in to assist with that evaluation based on what the initial officer had observed. By expanding the number of DREs, which as Representative Stevenson has mentioned, that's going to allow us to do that much more frequently, occasionally, and maybe even more occasionally than we would all hope. DRE just is not available, and then it is up to the officer to make that determination that somebody is impaired, and then to follow the protocols that are laid out in the impaired driving statute to obtain a test from that driver, and then based on the test results, then that is what leads to the eventual charging decision. Representative Petersburg, does that answer the basic question, sir?
Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. So members, what we'll do now is proceed to taking up seven amendments that we have before us, pre-filed. And I'd like to take the A-70 first, Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move the A-70 amendment. I've been working with Chair Stevenson for quite some time. He's been very open to taking input on this bill across, you know, the partisan divide. And I believe he has a genuine effort to get GOP support, and this has been a big part of the discussions. I understand it's not exactly transportation related, and I appreciate your latitude there, Mr. Chair. But this amendment reduces the in-home residential weights that you're allowed to possess from 5 pounds to 1.5 pounds. And then it makes the changes throughout the bill for that. And that is very important because the only public policy benefit I see of this bill is if it eliminates the black market. If it doesn't eliminate the black market, it really does not have a public policy benefit for the average Minnesotan. And 5 pounds of cannabis, as we saw in a previous committee meeting, is an enormous sum, so enormous that the state patrol can't even stand looking at it without confiscating it. So if the only reason somebody would actually have that weight in their home is likely to distribute. And a lot of the rationale is, well, if people are allowed to grow in their home, how much should they be allowed to have? In the bill, it has you can have 4 flowering plants and but 8 plants total. And if you were to harvest those 4 plants, you would have to be the greatest, you know, in-home marijuana grower in the country in order to really exceed 1.5 pounds with those 4 plants. 5 pounds is absolutely astronomical. However, the chair has indicated to me that this amendment will be more efficiently incorporated in commerce. So I know that's where we're going to send it back. I'd love to just get a quick comment on the chair on his intentions with this amendment in the future.
Thank you, Representative West. That is a correct assessment of my thoughts here. And I would like to get the reaction of the author and if he's amenable to taking this amendment, and then we could add it potentially in the Committee of Jurisdiction for Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative West, and I likewise really appreciate your willingness to work cross aisle on this issue and try and find some common ground. And I think that this amendment does hit that mark. This is an issue that a lot of people have been talking about, and I think that this is a reasonable approach that you're suggesting here. So I will commit to you publicly now that I will accept this amendment when offered in the Commerce Committee and encourage a yes vote on it in the Commerce Committee.
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that assurance, I will withdraw the A-70 amendment.
Thank you. Thank you for your communication with the chair on this, Chair Stevenson. Okay, we have another amendment, Representative West, A71 from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move the A71 amendment. This, I won't repeat myself too much, is a result of working with Chair Stevenson and him being truly open to the concerns of the minority here. We don't want this bill to be a partisan bill. It is something Minnesotans want by and large, and this amendment goes a long way in securing increased bipartisan support. What this amendment does is it deletes the diversity report requirements or diversity plan requirements when applying for a license in the bill. Currently in the bill, when you apply for a license, it's scored by the Office of Cannabis, and one of the things determined in that score is the business's diversity plan. And while that might sound well and good, clearly a lot of the bill is designed to encourage people of color and minorities to start these businesses. I don't think this diversity report actually helps them in any way. In fact, it makes it more difficult for somebody who's bringing in lower capital and less money to start their business because they have to do another report. They might need to hire somebody to draft this report. And this report is considered, as the bill stands currently, in the scoring system of whether they can get a license. So this, I believe, is counterintuitive to the approach in the bill, as well as from our side of the aisle, we think it's pretty pointless to do in the first place and will only serve to make the product more expensive, which will therefore make the black market more likely to exist. Now, I've been working with the chair for quite some time on this, with Chair Stevenson quite some time on this, so I'd love to hear his future intentions as he's indicated to me.
Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative West, likewise with this amendment, I would agree to accept it in the Commerce Committee if offered in the same spirit as the last one. And I do think that, it's important, I think, to a lot of members on both parties that we see a cannabis industry in Minnesota that is local, that encourages small business, is open to all members of our community here. We particularly want to see an industry that benefits the people who have been harmed by the prior regime, but I think we can accomplish those goals without this specific requirement. So I would accept this amendment in the Commerce Committee when it is offered there.
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that assurance, I will withdraw the A71 amendment.
The A71 is withdrawn. The next amendment is A65 that we'll consider, and Representative Petersburg, that is your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to move the A65 amendment. And what this amendment does, and we've heard from a lot of people over the years about brain development and some of the things that can impact that particular development, and there's pretty much a strong science belief that almost all people, brains finally come to maturity at 25, and they say that us guys are a little later than women, but this is really an amendment that changes use from 21 to 25 just because I think it's important for us to make sure that we don't create undue or unintentional issues with younger people that maybe are thinking that the state is verifying that it's okay to use. And so this just says we're going to change the age limit from 21 to 25. And we do that with alcohol. We actually lowered it many, many years ago and raised it back up to 21. And so I think this is appropriate for us to take. And that is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would ask for a no vote on the A65 amendment. While it is certainly true that there's evidence that the brain continues to develop until the age of 25, it's also true that as a society, we've kind of landed on age 21 as the age where you become an adult and you get to make decisions that maybe aren't always in your best interest. And I don't think that we should treat cannabis differently from alcohol, tobacco, gambling, or even major life decisions like, entering into a mortgage or starting a family. Once you're 21 in this country, you are an adult, and you should get to make all the decisions that an adult gets to make. And so I would ask for a no vote on the A65.
Mr. Chair, I would also like to request a roll call for this motion, and to finalize my comments is there is a difference between people accepting accountability with what they have and as their brain matures versus the way drugs can actually impact the development of that brain. And so this is something in which they're imbibing into them that we just simply don't know the long-term reactions to that. And so I would ask for a yes vote.
Representative Sensenmuro.
Thank you. I just wanted to speak to the amendment. I appreciate the amendment, Representative Petersburg. I share similar concerns about brain development and the effects of any kind of substance on that. But, you know, I went to, for Sovereignty Day yesterday, I went to the cannabis, legalizing cannabis section. And one thing that was talked about was, you know, with our unregulated market, the kind of marijuana that we are getting and some of the dangers of that marijuana. And I learned that oftentimes we're getting kind of reject marijuana from states that have legalized it. And there's lots of concerns about what is in that. And I'm frankly more concerned about that for brain development. Sure. And that's why, you know, I support having a regulated market, and I would rather have 21 to 25-year-olds partaking in the regulated market rather than the unregulated market.
Thank you. Last comment?
That's fine.
Okay, a roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman.
Yes.
Fogelman, yes. Hudela.
Yes.
Hudela, yes. Cagle.
No. No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson.
Sure.
Olson, yes. Sensenmuro.
No.
Sensenmuro, no. West.
Pass.
West, pass. And Mr. Chair, we have 5 ayes and 9 nays.
There being 5 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail. The next amendment before us is A75. I believe that's Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a running theme with my amendments. Thank you very much for being reasonable and listening to the concerns of the minority, or Chair Stevenson. I think I'm done praising you now.
Never gets old.
Now that's funny.
So this goes this directly. So finally, my amendments relate directly to this committee, which thank you for the latitude, Chair Hornstein. I know it's frustrating when that members get a little off topic. This increases funding, which is already in the bill, for $500,000. This increases it to between $5 and $10 million over the next 2 years for drug recognition enforcement officers. And based on the testimony we heard from Director Hansen, we know that this is crucially important because, well, yes, the only public policy benefit is eliminating the black market. But in order to make sure that this bill doesn't have a deleterious effect on our road safety, it's important to have these, as we do not have a roadside test. We need drug recognition enforcement across the board. It's going to take quite a few people. So just having 500,000 as exists currently in the bill isn't nearly enough. There needs to be a lot of this because, as you heard from Director Hansen, they have to call for somebody. It's like being on call. And he even mentioned that they have to call somebody from home. So increasing this funding is tremendously important. I've been in contact with Chair Stevenson on this provision as well, and I would like to hear what the Chair has to say about this in the future.
Thank you, Representative West. Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative West, as I said earlier, I certainly agree that we're going to need more DREs, and I think that the funding in the bill needs to be increased, not just with this amendment, but with any amendment that has a direct appropriation. I've been asking people to hold off and wait because we don't have a fiscal note on the bill yet. What I intend to do once we have a fiscal note is compare it against the revenue estimate and make sure that the bill is self-supporting, that all of the revenue that we raise accounts for all of the costs in the bill and all of the appropriations in the bill. I understand a fiscal note is imminent, but it is not here just yet. I also, as we said, we have this major amendment coming up in Commerce, and I don't want to take an amendment before that. So I would ask if Representative West would consider withdrawing the amendment on my promise that we will see more money for DREs in the final bill.
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually do have a follow-up on this one.
Sure.
So the numbers we have in here, 10 and 5, I'd like to have a little, at least a little more guidance on. You mentioned we're going to determine the numbers. I think, you know, these are going to be very close, if not the numbers. I mean, you could even do more than this, which I think would also be wise because the need will be so great. So I'd like, if you can put a little, at least something to clarify that, just a tiny bit for me.
Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative West, I will endeavor to get as close to 10 and 5, if not get higher than that, when we have a fiscal note and a revenue estimate.
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I was hoping for better than that, but I will take you at your word that you will come as close as humanly possible, and, I mean, we always can amend it again down the road. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will withdraw the A75.
The 75 is withdrawn. Thank you for the dialogue on that. The next amendment is A76, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A76 amendment. Simply looks at trying to establish a zero tolerance for THCs in our public transit. Put it in the similar scope as what our CDL drivers are, you know, we're looking at with them. Basically, any time a CDL driver runs the risk of losing a CDL if they have a positive test. I know in business, insurance, taxpayer risk, I know there's a really hard line on making sure that there's no THC level if you're either employment or if you're caught on the job with it. So it just puts it in line with some of those other levels. Because there's no guaranteed level and better testing is needed, we certainly should accept a zero tolerance for public transit. And even with the workforce shortages, zero tolerance, I think, will make it more likely that people will know where they're at in terms of applying for jobs in public transit.
Okay. A76 is moved.
And I'd like to get a roll call on that.
Okay. The A76 is moved, and a roll call has been requested. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think we heard from John Haslouden from the trucking industry that says, even though there may be some federal regulations in regards to testing and so forth, he thought it would be better for us to have a little bit more descriptive in what the state is expecting, especially since this is kind of a new rollout. And so it seems to me it makes sense that if even if the author believes that it's already covered under the bill, making it more specific seems like that would be a better way to make sure that everybody is understanding of the rules. Because we don't want to have any surprises out there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Chair Stevenson, did you have a response?
Mr. Chair, members, I would ask for a no vote on the A76 amendment. I think this amendment goes much broader than what was just described and broader than what I could support. I certainly support the idea that no one should be operating transit while consuming cannabis at that specific moment. But what the amendment does is it makes it a crime to operate transit when on line 1.6 there is physical evidence present in the person's body of the consumption of any cannabis flower, and it goes on from there. And the issue is that with cannabis, there can be physical evidence in the person's body of cannabis consumption that goes much longer after there's any intoxication or any impairment, days after in point of fact. And so what this amendment really is a ban on transit operators ever consuming cannabis, and it makes it a criminal act. As Mr. Haslouden mentioned, and as is my belief, the way that federal law currently operates makes it very difficult for anyone who's operating any mode of transit to have cannabis and keep their licenses intact. So there is an element of this that's already covered by federal law or regulation, but I do believe that from the state of Minnesota's perspective, this is not the approach we would want to go. I certainly, if this was a more narrowly tailored amendment that prohibited people from consuming cannabis while they're operating a vehicle or imminently before you're operating a transit operation, I would support that. But this goes much beyond that, and so I would ask for a no vote.
Representative Petersburg and Representative Murphy.
Thank you. I'll just follow up on that in regards to saying, look, current federal law in regards to CDL requires that if you have any in your bloodstream at all, no matter how long ago you consumed it, whether you're impaired or not, you are automatically taken out of service. And that is part of the CDL requirement and part of what you are trying to imply here. And so we're saying now, but if you're a transit operator, which is responsible for actually public transit, moving people around, that we're going to allow you to have THC in your system, even though the federal system doesn't have that. I think that's a dangerous message to put out there, and I think it needs to be restrictive because we are talking about the safety of those that are not only riding on the rail, but also those that are being confronted with that rail cars coming down the road at you when you're crossing the railroad, the track. So this seems like a very appropriate position to take, and it's one that I think is actually supported by current federal law in regards to CDLs.
Maybe we'll take, are there other questions? You're, as the maker of the amendment, I will give you the last word. So I want to make sure there's, oh, Representative Brandt, sorry.
Yeah, I have a question for maybe more of our researchers. Is there something in federal statute already regarding this for transit folks across our country?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brandt, I'll have to look into it and get back to you.
Thank you for the question. We will get back to you. Anyone else before I call on the maker of the amendment? Author of the amendment. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I think, too, it would be nice to know, since Mr. Hansen here with the Office of Traffic Safety and Public Safety is here, maybe it would be nice to get his clarification on what happens to somebody with a CDL if they're deemed to be, in under the influence. So it would be nice to get a response from him.
Mr. Hansen, you're busy today. Welcome back to the committee, I just want to make sure that you had heard the question, and if you need any additional clarification, Representative Murphy can help you with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy and members. I think I did understand the question, and it's a little bit outside of my normal area when we talk about the CDL regulations. I would really want to defer that to somebody from the State Patrol Commercial Vehicle Section. As far as what has to be detected in order to be disqualified at that time and placed out of service. And depending on the variety of substances or the type of substance, there may be a little bit different window that applies to that. So I apologize. I can't give you a definitive answer, but I want to make sure that you would get the correct answer. But I will reach out, and I can get that information for you.
Thank you. Representative Murphy and then Representative Kraft.
Is there a window where you could be relieved of your CDL with marijuana?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I believe there is, yes.
Okay. Before you do your concluding comments or other comments, I'll call on Representative Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not a question for, it's just a comment. As I'm thinking about this, if an operator goes out and has an event and maybe Friday night goes out and has some drinks and gets intoxicated, and then Monday, but does this in a responsible way, and then Monday goes to steer the light rail, we wouldn't have an issue with that. So I struggle to see the difference in this situation.
Thank you for your comment. Representative Petersburg, and then we'll have a last comment from Representative Murphy.
Thank you. And the difference, to the quick comment, is that the body metabolizes marijuana differently than the alcohol. Alcohol is very specific. We have studies in which says that every hour after you consumed alcohol, your blood level is going to go down, and so within a certain period of time. But marijuana, you could have that in your system for days afterwards. And whether or not that's impaired or not, it is what the standard has been at this point. So our body just metabolizes it differently. So thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Representative Stevenson, or actually, let's just hear your last comment, and then we'll get a response from Representative Stevenson, and then do the roll call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been a CDL driver for 30 years. It just seems like there's a lot of things that are put on CDL drivers that this would really escape when we're looking at public drivers. So private, there's just a lot of conditions that would eliminate your ability to have a CDL. I have a CPAP machine. I'm hooked online. Everybody knows that I'm hooked online. It's just one of those things. But to have it this lax on for our buses and our transit train drivers just seems really unrealistic. And not really, it's not like anything else that's already out there. So thank you.
Is that a Stevenson?
Mr. Chair, well, a couple of things. I don't agree that there's a difference between private and public here. Again, if you have, as Mr. Houseladen said, if you have any kind of federal license, which our trans operators have to have, they're already not allowed to have cannabis and they're subject to the drug testing. I think Representative Kraft kind of hit the nail on the head here in saying that we're talking about making it criminal, because what this amendment does, we should be clear, is not just prohibit people from consuming cannabis if you're operating transit ever. It makes it a crime to have any amount in your body. It goes much beyond what we're discussing. It makes it a criminal act, and that's worth noting. But it does it at a point where even if there's no impairment, and what's important, Representative Piersburg described how cannabis is metabolized at a lesser rate, but that doesn't mean you're impaired longer, okay? Just because THC is detectable in your system does not mean that you are impaired and can't drive. There is a period where you're impaired and can't drive, but THC is detectable long after, which is why this is not good language, because it captures a lot of people who are not impaired and makes it a crime. So I would ask for a no vote.
I will take a comment from Representative Wilson, then we'll vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question based off of what you just stated. You said that there's a level in which impairment is, well, there's still some. Can you tell me what that number is? At what number, what THC level is impairment at and not at? Can you tell me that, please?
Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, as I said earlier, alcohol is really the outlier here, where you have a defined level in statute. For no other substance is there such a thing. And that's actually something that we've had conversations with the DWI task force about, whether we want to set an impairment threshold in law. Other states have tried that. And the preference from the professionals who work in this space, including the DWI task force, is not to set an impairment threshold, but instead to set a de facto threshold that's measured in blood or otherwise, but rather to just to base it on whether you are impaired or not, not whether you have a certain quantity in your blood.
Quick follow-up. We'll take Representative Brand, and then we will be voting on this amendment.
Thank you. So does impairment mean you're driving poorly? Because there are people who drive poorly who are not impaired. Can you just tell me? I'm just having a real hard time identifying how a police officer or a peace officer would identify that, you know, you and I have the exact same product in our system at the exact same level. You're impaired, I'm not, or I'm impaired and you're not. You know, 0.04, 0.08, that's real easy to identify that, you know, Representative Olson shouldn't be driving. I'm wondering, how do we figure this out? Because I'm seriously concerned about the fact that we're going to have people driving on the roads with this in their system. And I guess I'll just hold that off until I get to my amendment.
Okay. Why don't we take a quick comment from Representative Brand, and then we'll vote.
Yeah. So I asked the question just a couple of minutes ago about what federal law says. And actually, you know, first of all, it's a Schedule I drug at the federal level. And there is already policy in place that any safety-sensitive transportation employees, including pilots, school bus drivers, truck drivers, train engineers, subway operators, aircraft maintenance personnel, transit firearms security personnel, ship captains, pipeline emergency response personnel, have to be subject to federal drug testing. That's a whole lot more people that are mentioned in this piece of legislation that we, if we were to amend at the state level, would be included. There's a 49 CFR Part 40. All of those people that I mentioned have to be subjected to transportation, DOT drug and alcohol testing at any time. And so there's a lot of pieces that are missing from this amendment.
Thank you. With that, we will take a vote, a roll call vote on the A76 Murphy Amendment. The clerk will take the roll. Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman.
Yes.
Fogelman, yes. Hudela.
Yes.
Hudela, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Norris excused. Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Sensormira.
No.
Sensormira, no. West.
Yes.
West, yes. And Mr. Chair, we have 6 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 6 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail.
Okay, we have a couple more amendments. We have an A77 from Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Amendment A77. It's really similar to A76, but it really itemizes the school bus drivers. Just something, you know, I think we're getting around to it, but, you know, when it comes to CDL drivers, the reality is it takes a number before you're not at risk of losing your license because of insurance, your employer, the risk to your employer. You know, anyone with a commercial driver's license runs the risk of losing their CDL if they drive after consuming what's now a legal product in Minnesota. That's the reality of it. The reality of it is that CDL drivers, if they test positive, and I know people even with CBDs, if they test positive for THCs, they could lose their CDL. And it's because of their employer, it's because of insurance, that really puts them outside of that window. So anyway, I think it's really significant for our bus drivers to protect our kids. We need them to be THC free. I think that's really makes sense. We do it for our CDL drivers. They really need to be to keep their license. I think bus drivers should too.
Thank you.
Roll call, please.
Roll call has been requested and granted. Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, school bus drivers have to have a CDL. So everything you were just talking about applies to school bus drivers. What your amendment does, again, is makes it a crime, not just prohibiting use, but makes it criminal for school bus drivers to really ever consume cannabis, even if it has no impact on their driving. It would be a crime, and I don't agree with that. If we had an amendment that was more narrowly tailored to say that you can't have any, you can't consume cannabis while you're driving a school bus, right before you're driving a school bus, in the hours before you're driving a school bus, totally on board with that. I think that would make a lot of sense. But to Representative Kraft's point a minute ago, you could be days in advance, and this amendment would make it not just unlawful, not just against the rules, which it already is, but a crime to have cannabis, even if it has no impact on your driving of the school bus. And I don't agree with that. So I would ask for a no vote.
Thank you very much. Additional discussion? Okay, we have a roll call. Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to point out again that in the previous conversation we had that state initiatives have no bearing on the federal law that are already in place. And school bus drivers are a part of that category of people that I was talking about that are safety-sensitive transportation employees. Federal law is going to supersede state law at any time, and this is included in this issue.
Representative Petersburg, quickly.
Well, actually, I think you have that a little bit wrong. We can always add more stringent responsibility and requirements on federal regulations. We can't just take them away. And we do that with school bus drivers already. It requires a different testing, et cetera. So it's perfectly legal for us to do this. I would urge a yes vote.
Representative Murphy has moved the A77 and requested a roll call. Did you want to make one last statement?
The only comment I'll make just in generalization is that, you know, when you're impaired, we talk about not knowing when that's going to happen, if it's 3 or 4 days ahead. You know, we just don't know. That's the problem. We don't know if he's impaired or the person's impaired, he or she. That's the problem. That's why it needs to be zero. Thank you.
Okay, the clerk will take the roll on the A77 Murphy Amendment.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke. No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman.
Yes.
Fogelman, yes. Hudela.
Yes.
Hudela, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Norris excused. Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Sensormira.
No.
Sensormira, no. West.
Yes.
West, yes. Mr. Chair, we have 6 ayes and 8 nays. There being six ayes and eight nays, the motion does not prevail. Okay, our last amendment is the A78 amendment from Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A78 amendment.
The amendment is moved. Proceed.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this amendment would create a zero tolerance with regard to any individual driving with a THC level. Now, the author of the amendment has already stated that this is not practical, as he would say, but also he's not providing any practical solution to making sure that our roads are safe. Now, I would like to just point to a little bit of some issues here. The Sheriff Association has testified that there is no way that they can confidently know when someone's under the influence of THC. And so this amendment would be necessary due to the fact that until we know where that level is, how we can figure out a better way of testing, a better way of figuring this out, this would be a pertinent amendment. Now, I'm going to go to some numbers here. The Department of Public Safety in 2020 stated that there were $1.6 billion worth of economic losses due to car accidents on Minnesota roads. There was 101,914 motor vehicles involved in crashes in 2020, and there were 394 individuals who were killed while driving on the roads. Now, there was also a study in 2022. The Insurance Institute of Highway Safety found that after marijuana legalization, the rate of car crashes with injuries increased by nearly 6%, while fatal crashes rose by 4%. So I'll do a little bit of math for you. So this study found that you'll have $96 million more in economic losses when you vote for this bill. You'll have 6,115 more vehicles involved in crashes, and you'll have 16 more people who will die on Minnesota roads every single year as a result of this bill. So the author of the bill stated that, our current laws regarding marijuana do more harm than good. But we've also had the chief of police who testified that in states where recreational marijuana is legal, the black market still thrives. So I'm wondering, how is the death of 16 more people per year good? Because that's what his claim is. We're going towards zero deaths. That's what we're trying to do. We have policies in place that are going towards zero deaths on the road. And this is exactly the opposite. And so until we have some way of identifying at what point you are impaired with marijuana, we need to move away from it. We cannot be doing something like this that will endanger the lives of Minnesotans willy-nilly. Just wanton, irresponsible behavior. I would ask that you vote yes on this amendment. A zero policy is necessary until we come up with a way in which we can actually test whether or not you are intoxicated or under the influence of this drug. It is necessary for people's lives. I would ask for a roll call vote on this as well.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, I'd ask for a no vote on this amendment. And rhetoric aside, I think that the approach you're taking here is not correct. It's not supported. It's not consistent with other things in state law. I don't see you or anyone else offering a bill that says that you can't have any Ambien ever and drive, or any prescription drug and drive, or Benadryl and drive. These are all substances which are already currently legal under Minnesota law, where the arguments that you just made also apply to those substances. We don't have a test to see if there's enough Ambien in your system that it impairs your driving, but no one's introduced a bill to say you can't drive a car if you have any Ambien in your system. This just isn't the right approach to this. You mentioned some studies. I will tell you that there are studies that show other results. The data is mixed and inconclusive on this result. Part of it is because of the issue that we keep talking about, which is that cannabis is detectable in your blood long after impairment. So pointing at exactly what causes a motor vehicle crash is, with that data limitation, causes some studies to do some weird things. And that's why you see different results depending on the methodology of the study. And you can find studies that show no increase or even a decrease if you go out and look for them. What I would tell you is that our law has a way of handling this problem. We already do it. We prosecute people for driving under the influence of all sorts of legal substances. We will be able to do that in the future, and we will be able to take the steps that are necessary to keep our roads safe. And what this amendment does, to be very clear, is exactly what Representative Kraft was talking about, which it says that if you go out on a Friday night and responsibly consume cannabis, you may not drive on Monday morning because that could still be in your detectable in your bloodstream. And that is not a policy that I support.
Representative Murphy, and then we'll go to Representative Olson for a concluding comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to support, you know, this amendment, you know, under your studies and reports, you know, it looks like we have quite an emphasis coming on impaired driving, number of accidents involving one or more drivers using cannabis, a number of arrests, positive test results, number of convictions, driving under the influence. Seems like it's the plan coming up to measure it. Two things. Have you looked at any other states that have already measured these? And if we have this provision in here, isn't that really suggesting that this amendment makes sense?
Representative Stevens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, well, yeah, we're taking this issue very seriously in this bill. You're exactly right. We're trying to measure data. We have an oral fluid pilot program to try and develop a test. We're going to have substantial funding for drug recognition experts. We have money for education and prevention and treatment. One of the real benefits to legalization is it allows you to deal with the downstream consequences of consumption in an honest fashion, instead of just saying, well, we made it illegal, therefore it's not happening, which is the approach that prohibition has taken for the last 50 years, which has failed miserably. If people think that banning marijuana and keeping it illegal is going to make our roads safe, I've got 50 years of evidence that that's not true. Have we looked at other states? Yes, absolutely we've looked at other states. And we've adopted some things that have worked in other states, and we are not doing things that that haven't worked in other states. I mentioned earlier that we looked at adopting a sort of per se threshold. Other states have done that. It's not a good policy solution. Our own DWI task force doesn't support that. But we did adopt all of the recommendations of the DWI task force as it pertains to this bill, because this is an issue that's important. For the reasons that Representative Olson mentions, that we want to have safe roads and we want to drive towards zero deaths. Prohibition does not help us accomplish that.
To the maker of the amendment gets the last word, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. So to Representative Kraft's idea of intoxicating yourself on Friday night and not being able to drive on Monday morning, I'd be okay with that, because what I understand is that we have no idea what we're doing here. There is no test. There is no identifiable way in which we can tell you that you are safe to drive and you are not safe to drive. Once we have that, I'll be much more amiable to this idea. But we're putting innocent people's lives on the line. Now, thousands of people die every single year in the United States from alcohol consumption, and that's really bad. We have an actual way in which we can test your intoxication level using alcohol. So at least we have something. In this case, we have literally nothing except for the fact that a police officer or a peace officer or a state trooper can stop you and look at you and say, you know what, you were driving rather erratically. Do you potentially have some marijuana in your system? That's it. That is all we have. And until we have something that is better than just a peace officer looking at you and saying, yep, that person's got it. Yep, he's done for. We need something. It's irresponsible. People will die, and you know it. I ask yes on this amendment.
Okay, to the A78 amendment, the clerk will take the roll.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman.
Yes.
Fogelman, yes. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Norris, excused. Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Sensimira.
No.
Sensimira, no. West.
Yes.
West, yes. And Mr. Chair, we have 6 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 6 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. Members, before we vote on the final bill, I wanted to just announce we'll stay a few minutes late so we can hear Representative Cagle's bill. I don't think that'll take long, but you never know. So, final comments on House File 100 before we vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, if you're recognizing me. I think we've said most of what we wanted to say in our amendments here. First, I'd like to also request a roll call on the final
roll
passage.
Roll call on final passage.
Well. I think there are a lot of issues that are still dealing with, and I appreciate Chair Stevenson's work on this, because it's gone through a lot of committees. He's done a lot of hard work on it. But we still, sometimes we have to kind of be what I would consider the parents in the room. And I just personally, again, approve of this bill. And so I would ask for a no vote. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Quick final comments, Chair Stevenson.
Thank you for the committee time. I ask for a yes vote.
Thank you very much.
We have a roll call on House File 100. I will renew my motion that House File 100 be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce. Mr. Petrie.
Hornstein.
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Tabke.
Yes.
Tabke, aye. Petersburg.
No.
Petersburg, no. Brand.
Aye.
Brand, aye. Elkins.
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Fogelman.
No.
Fogelman, no. Hudela.
Pass.
Hudela, pass. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Kraft.
Aye.
Kraft, aye. Murphy.
No.
Murphy, no. Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Norris, excused. Olson.
No.
Olson, no. Censor Mira.
Aye.
Censor Mira, aye. West.
Aye.
West, aye. And Mr. Chair, we have 9 ayes and 4 nays.
There being 9 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails. You're on your way back to Commerce. Thank you, members, for a very good discussion. Appreciated it, appreciated the amendments and the substance of our conversation. We'll move to our final bill of the day, and that is House File 949. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 949 to...
I'm sorry?
Where is this bill going? I'm sorry. General Register.
Ways and Means.
Ah, Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 949 to Ways and Means.
Okay. House File 949 is moved to Ways and Means. Tell us about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 949 is the voter education bill. This is one we've been working on for a while, but just with the increase, I believe what it was at 16,000 new water vehicles registered in the motorcrafts registered in the state. And so I really just want to make sure that folks who are out there using our waterways are doing it in the most responsible and respectful way. So with that, I can turn it over to my testifier real quickly.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Adam Block. I've been a conservation officer for the past 18 years, serving as the DNR's voting law administrator for the past 5 years. I'm here today in support of House File 949 that will expand the requirements for boating safety education while on our waterways. I would like to thank Representative Cagle for bringing this bill forward. In 2022, Minnesota had almost 620,000 motorized boats navigating our waterways. As more and more boaters visit their favorite waterway, we continue to see increased congestion, which requires a greater degree of skill and education to safely operate their motorboat. In the 1990s, Minnesota became a leader in the country regarding boating education requirements when we established requirements for our youth to obtain boating safety education if they chose to operate a motorboat. While that was a great first step, unlike Minnesota, many states across the country have expanded the requirements over the years. This first step proved that further education saves lives, as we saw our boating fatality and injury numbers sharply decline after the youth requirements were signed into law. Minnesotans and the many others that visit this state value the experiences and memories made while spending a day on the water. However, too often these experiences and memories end in tragedy. In our 2022 boating fatality report is awaiting final numbers, but currently we have 15 fatalities listed, with the average age just shy of 42 years old, operating on average a 19-foot motorboat. With the added boating pressure we are experiencing, coupled with the amount of tragedy occurring on our waterways, I am asking that you support House File 949 to protect our waterways and make them safer for all users.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Olson.
Well, this isn't a testimony to the state trooper or the DNR officer, so this is to the bill in itself.
Sure.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author of the bill, just curious, it states here that it's going to be effective July 1st, 2028 for those born on or after July 1st, 1987. Curious as to why you believe that I should need water vehicle training, whereas you wouldn't.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wouldn't agree with that. I'm probably going to definitely go take this. I know how quickly things can turn, because a day at the lake can turn pretty scary. And so I think what this does is just it's grandfathering in people, and maybe I can ask our conservation officer to explain why that date was chosen.
Proceed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, that July 1 of 1987 born-on date is the date we currently have established for off-highway vehicle use, which is our most recent born-on date that was created at the legislature. So that's the date that was picked. So we didn't create say, another born-on date, if you will.
I guess I'll have to take the class.
Thank you. You and Representative Cagle together. Okay, any further discussion? Chair Cagle, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is a good bill. Support it, please.
Thank you. It won't be long till we, hopefully not too long before we'll be back on the lake. With that, members, I'll renew, Representative Cagle renews her motion that House File 949 be re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, members, good discussion again, and we'll see everybody back here at 8:30 on Thursday. With that, we're adjourned.